Good evening. This is the NLA Hamsnet, conducted by KIZRE. That's me. I'm Terry. I live in Colorado. And I was at our last meeting, we were going to talk about propagation, and we kind of ran out of time. So I'm going to do a little bit more today, and I wanted to give you guys a chance to hear all of this. Now, I'm going to just start talking. I hope everybody's out there listening. It is being recorded, so you can listen to it another time if you need to. This net happens every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time or Eastern Standard Time. If anybody has a question or wants to stop me, that's fine. All you got to do is give me your name and your state, or if you have one, a call sign, a name and a state. And I'll stop it right there and answer any questions. Okay, we're going to talk about propagation, which is the beginning of Chapter 4 in the ARRL Technician class, the third edition. And I wanted to give you a few things that you could talk about. We've talked about line of sight on most UHF and VHF communications. I want to ensure that you remember some of those things. Radio waves can be reflected, they can be diffracted. There's something called knife edge propagation when something is really sharp. On the other side, you'll have places where there's good reception and bad reception. Radio waves can also penetrate openings in otherwise solid objects as long as at least one side of the opening is larger than about one-half wavelength. For this reason, UHF works pretty good because it's such a shorter wavelength when you get into town, urban areas. When radio waves arrive at different points, and they get reflected off of rocks, like Dave talks about, KE0OG. You can write that down, KE0OG. He's a friend of mine, and I've known him for about 15 years. And, it's going on 20 years now, because I first met him in 1997 when I first got my radio. If you look up KE0OG on the Internet, you'll find him. He has a whole series of videos on the technician class radio license. And he mentions in the 4.1 presentation the same stuff I'm talking about here. And he lives in a valley. And lots of times the radio waves will bounce around off of different rocks. And at the end of the valley where somebody is listening to him or he's listening to the other person, he will get dead spots, and he moves the radio just a couple of feet over to one direction or another, and sometimes the dead spot will go away, and it'll have a really gangbusters-type signal. So it all depends. And, multipath, that's what that's called. It's multipath interference. It can deaden itself because the paths take a little bit different path, and that's why they call it multipath. And the signals, when they add together, sometimes cancel each other out. Another one is flutter or picket fencing. You hear this as you're driving down the road or something, and you're bouncing off of somebody or somebody else is doing it, and you'll hear hearing get louder and quieter, louder and quieter, louder and quieter. And sometimes it can be so fast, we're moving pretty good, to where it looks like, it sounds like you're getting only every other word. I'd like to talk about now some things that have to do with the ionosphere. Now, right next to the ground, where we're all standing and what you're breathing, is considered the troposphere. That means the air next to the ground. And in the book here, it says the troposphere goes up to about 6 miles up. Well, that's about 35,000 feet thereabouts. So up above that, you're into the stratosphere. And the stratosphere goes from about 6 miles up to about 30 miles up. So you can draw a little picture for yourself. And I let me just interject this. Anybody that wants can send me a friend request on Skype, and I will send you some of these links, or you can talk to me if you have a question on Skype, and I can actually show you some things. And or you can send me an email, and I'd be happy to fill in some of these links that maybe you can't find. And I don't know how to turn that off. Let's see. Let's turn off the speaker for a minute, and then you won't hear that anymore. I'm YB Pilot, Yankee Bravo Pilot, on Skype, so you're welcome to call me anytime. All right, back to the stratosphere. So we have the troposphere up to about 35,000 feet, which is roughly 6 miles. Then we have the troposphere, and then we have the troposphere is up to about 6 miles. Then the stratosphere, and then up above the stratosphere from about 30 miles to about 250 miles, we have the ionosphere. Now, why do they call it the ionosphere? It's because the sun, during the day, will radiate down upon that atmosphere, and it knocks off, the energy coming from the sun will actually knock off an electron off of some molecules of air that are up there, whatever's up there, it'll knock one off. And when you knock off, if you remember from your chemistry class, you had one, you knock off an electron. Now you have a positively charged ion and a free electron running around up there. And that's why they call it the ionosphere. As you go up higher and higher, our atmosphere gets less and less dense. It's very dense close to the ground, but it's less and less dense as you get up. And anybody wants can come up to Colorado. I'm at about 5,300-4,000 feet. And I breathe fine in it, but I have a friend who's at 8,000 feet. When I go up to 8,000 feet, it's no problem for her because she lives in it. But when we go walking and hiking, I kind of huff and puff and drag my feet. So as you get up higher, there's less and less atmosphere. It's less and less dense, but it still gets charged. So that band between 30 miles up and 250 miles up, roughly, because, you know, where do you say it stops? It's just out there. So they give a number of 250,000 or 250 miles. It has different layers. Now, these different layers are called D, for delta for D, echo, E, and F, Foxtrot. Now, the D layer tends to absorb radio energy. And so it's actually counterproductive to some. You have to have enough energy to get through the D layer, but it does strange things. The E layer, the D layer goes between 30 miles and 60 miles. So it's pretty thin. That's 30 miles thin. So if you think of 30 miles in the ground and stood it up, 30 miles to 60 miles. E is on top of that, and it goes from about 60 miles to 70 miles. It's kind of narrow and thin. It's a specific layer in the atmosphere. And then the F layer actually combines at night, and in the day, when it gets energized, actually becomes the F1 layer and the F2 layer. So it actually breaks into two pieces. Now, what happens is that when we send if you think about being on top of a mountain or on top of a hill, think the last time you got on top of a mountain, you can see a long ways. You can see all the way to what's called the horizon. Everybody knows what the horizon is. That's how far your radio can go normally with the UHF or VHF. But when you get to the long waves, you actually get better by this ionized layers up in the E layer and the F layers. it will, that ionization will actually tend to bend the radio signal, so it appears like it's bouncing off of the radio signal. All this air is conductive when it's charged. All those free electrons can do really neat things. And so the signal can go up, hit, and then go down in what's called a hop. And then it hit the ground, and sometimes it keeps going. Most of the stuff off the E layer, you can bounce it, and it might go, you know, 300, 400, 500 miles, maybe 1,200 miles, about the max. And sometimes it's subjective to what's called ducting. E layer sporadic E is what they call it, very rarely. And it just makes a little place that isn't very high, and it sits there and ducts between the E layer and the D layer and goes droop, to wherever it's got to go. And it can go a long ways. It's gone as much as 1,200 miles, according to the book here. I know people in California talk to Hawaii sometimes with sporadic heat. So during the day, you have the D layer, the E layer, the F1 and F2 layer, because the F layers are separated. And what starts happening is that different frequencies will bounce in a different way. And you get to a concept that's called the maximum usable frequency, MUF, or MUF. And the maximum usable frequency is dependent upon what's the highest frequency that works, that will bend and do a hop or two over to wherever you got to go. That frequency, and let me back up just a little because I forgot one little thing. When you're sending out a radio wave, there's a certain amount of energy that goes up at a particular frequency. If that frequency is too high, it'll bust right through the F, the E, the D, the E, the F layers, all of them, F1, F2, and it'll just keep going in space forever. But if it's too low, the D layer absorbs it all. You get nothing. It's not going to go anywhere. But when it's just right, it will bend and go back down to Earth, and it might skip 1,000 miles. And oddly enough, depending upon what the angle is that launches, sometimes you get dead spots 100, 200 miles out where nobody can hear you and you can't hear them. But you can hear somebody over in Russia or someplace else, over in Europe or down in South America or up in Canada, and it's very strange. And that's because as it hops, it's taking a multi-hop path, and the hop where it's up getting bent by the ionosphere, there's no signal down by the ground. And so they can't hear you in that. So it makes, if you look down upon it and put yourself as the target in the center, there's bands going out from you where they can first hear you on ground wave, and that's about where the horizon is. And then you have a little area where they can't hear you. And then you have the next ring is a ring around you that is where the first hop lands. And they can hear you pretty well, depending on how close to the center of that they are. And then you get another space where nobody can really hear you. And then you get another on the next hop. They can hear you again at that that next place. And this goes on and on and on. During the day with the sun out, the F1 and F2 layers come out. The F layer separates, and there's two layers, and different frequencies will bounce off that thing. And because one is higher than the other, you will get different propagation characteristics. Instead of getting a 1,000-mile hop, you might get a 1,500-mile hop out of the one and not the other. Or maybe you're bouncing off both of them because you're below the MUF, the maximum usable frequency that each one has. The lowest frequency that can travel between these points without being absorbed is the lowest usable frequency. So sometimes you got to have it above 5 megahertz, but you can't have it below 10 megahertz or 20 megahertz. It just all depends. At night, the sun goes down and these bands slowly close back as they get discharged, but they're really, really good there for a while. And you get really good propagation because now you got a thick air flare and it bends lots more signals. And the places where the rings around the target, as I was talking about, those rings are much narrower now because it bends the radio wave a little differently as coming off of your antenna. It goes a little bit different direction, and that direction will bend differently, and so it covers a lot more. So you tend to hear a lot more stations after the sun goes down, and you're staying below the maximum usable frequency. Let's see. What are all these numbers? Well, there's some places you can go. I don't have them here. I tried to get some, but there's the Space Weather comes to mind. I saw one. There's just so much on that. I couldn't really decide what to use, and I didn't pick one because I didn't want to have to give the whole long thing. But if you search for radio propagation, radio wave propagation, something like that, go down through them and look at the different things. It's very interesting. I did go and find somebody's, let's see, this was Cornell physics professor Bob Richardson at Cornell University. He's on YouTube, and he has a thing about propagation. And the equipment he's using looks old. It is old. It was made by people at the university long ago. And some of the things that he showed you actually demonstrate what some of this stuff looks like. So if you can ignore some of the extra stuff he's talking to first-year physics students at Cornell University, just let all that flow by you and just watch some of the things that he does to kind of show you what it looks like. This is what a dipole is. This is how this energy gets from over here to over here. And he actually uses a spark gap transmitter, a very low power one, and it actually affects the TV. You can see these lines going across the TV as he turns it on. He also explains a dipole, and then he puts a dipole up and shows you how it receives and lights a bulb because it's putting out RF. And then he takes and shows you a rod, and the radio signal is going down the rod. If you could put a yardstick right there, you'd find out that as he moves this light bulb down across that rod from one end to the other, you see places where the light lights up and the lights out, and the light lights up and the lights out. And what you're seeing, and he doesn't explain it real well for technician class, but what you're seeing is you're seeing either a high positive spot or a high negative spot of where that goes. He also mentions the magnetic component to all these waves. The first spark gap he's showing the magnetic field that's being created and how the magnetic field is actually transferring the energy. So I want you to realize that I'm neglecting to tell you a lot of things, and it's simply because I don't want you confused. You can get confused real easy on this stuff unless you're able to ask questions. Every time a electric field goes out from an antenna, perpendicular to it is a magnetic field. And anytime you have electrons moving, you have a magnetic field being created by those electrons, whether you're using a wire or air. And so that has to be taken into account. But he also shows them that dipole. We talked about resonance last week. He takes one of the elements in the dipole and lengthens it out by about a foot or two. And all of a sudden, it doesn't light up the light anymore unless you get very close. And that's because the frequency coming out and the magnetic and the electronic fields, electric fields, are resonant with that dipole of a certain length. And when it's not that length, it's not as resonant anymore, and so it doesn't light up the light. So he takes a dipole with different bulbs all the way up and down it, and he shows you how the ones near the center light up and the ones near the ends don't. That's because most of the energy going through that dipole is right there at the center, and the ends don't get as much. And it's a fascinating thing, and you can watch it if you want. There's plenty of places to look it up on YouTube. Let's see. I think I've just about run myself out of things that I want to say, so I'll throw it open for questions. Anybody want to ask a question, please call now.
Yeah, this is KCT, Pennsylvania. Jen, I'm sharing real time.
I'm only getting about every third word, Jen.
So,
Jen, I'm only getting about every third word.
Yeah, that's. I wish I could change that. Hear me better?
That's better. I hear you there. And then nothing.
Okay. Okay. Can you hear that?
Not very well. I heard, can you hear that? That's all I heard.
Okay. Done.
Can everybody else hear Jan?
Nope.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
So I would say it's on your side, Jan.
Sure.
Sure.
May I ask a question?
Yeah, why don't you, while Jan works out whatever it is he's doing.
Could you explain again to me how the interference in a television, what causes that? I didn't quite understand when you said it causes lines through a television.
Yeah, what happens is he's using a spark gap transmitter. And we talked about a spark gap transmitter as being, it's got watts and watts of frequencies when it sends it out. And one of those just happens to be on the frequency of his television signal when he was recording this. And that signal ends up as these little white dashes going across the screen. And that's from the spark gap transmitter. And it's just that a spark gap is very dirty. It's a very wide band, and that's why they quit using it. They found a way to get down and narrow it down to a particular frequency. Nowadays, it's trivial. We can do it with just about any radio. But back then, that spark gap transmitter put out all kinds of frequencies, and they didn't really know that it was doing that for a while. And then once people tried to start talking at the same time, they realized, well, he's not even on the same frequency I am, and I'm getting his signal. So they started refining the radio arts. It's simply because that a spark gap it's not there, and then it's there. It's like a square wave. I don't know if you've ever worked it out, but in physics they have a little thing where you take a sine wave and you take every odd multiple sine wave and you start adding them together and the wave looks different. And after a while, all these different frequencies add up And if you get enough of them as you approach infinity, it becomes a square wave. And a square wave is exactly what a spark gap transmitter is putting out. It's either on or it's off. Really sharp attacks, really quick decays. And that square wave ends up throwing out all kinds of harmonics that interfere with the television. I hope I didn't snow you, and I hope you understood. But
I did understand that. Thank you very much. Back in those days, and also currently, are there people being? Do people need to be shielded, or do they feel any kind of? Are people becoming sensitive to RF feelings, or do you find that in your community?
Not very much.
Well, good.
If you go out and you stand in front of a powerful antenna, you might get an RF burn or something. But for the most part, it's not there. One of the things in the manual, though, and I haven't looked it up, so I couldn't really tell you what page it's on, but you have to figure out, and they give you the formulas to figure out exposure. It's down in Chapter 9 is where it is, Evaluating Exposure.
Okay.
And there's, let's see, 9.2 is the one that I've always seen. So if you can control where you're at, and nowadays you have to do this for every antenna you erect, and what you usually come up with is the antenna is out of the way enough for an uncontrolled area that you don't have to worry about it. But you do have to do the math and be able to show that you did the math, then everybody is safe.
Okay.
I would recommend Chapter 9. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
This is Helena in Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh. This ARRL book, I'm on the website, but is there a book? I'm a book person instead of a computer read it online person. Can we get the book? Go through.
Oh, yeah. You can get it off of Amazon, or you can get it off the ARRL page right there. You want the ham radio, the technician ham, it says ham radio license manual, third edition. And then down at the bottom, it says level one technician. It's got a big yellow check mark on it. So what you're looking for is the technician license manual, third edition.
Okay, I am on the website, Terry. Where is it at on the website?
Well, I don't know if I don't remember.
Oh, that's all right. Tell me the name of it again, and I'll search it on Amazon. Then
I was up there just earlier. Look on the ARRL web, and there's a training on the banner at the top. There's an education, licensing, education, and training. If you click on that,
I got it.
And then on the right, there's a ARR books, gear, and more. And the first one is a license manual with the check on the first one. So if you click on that, it will pull up a page. And that's it right there. That's the front of it. And you can buy off of that right there.
Okay, so it's the ARR Ham Radio License Manual, third edition, right?
Right, that's it. And the check mark is on the first level one technician. On the very bottom of the cover, it says level one technician. And it's got a big yellow check mark right there. Good book. You'll learn so much just by having this.
Okay, but that second page just opened. So where is the check mark?
It has a picture of the manual.
Yes.
And down at the bottom of it, there's these three blocks. So this book can be for technician or for general or for extra, amateur extra.
Mm-hmm.
And you want the one that says check on technician. It's got a check mark on the level one technician.
Level one technician. All right, got it. Thank you.
Okay. Now, do we... who was that before? Was that Jan in Kansas or who?
I'm Debbie in Wisconsin.
Okay, Debbie, did I answer your question?
You certainly did. Thank you very, very much. I appreciate that. I'm going to get out my dad's old CB radio and keep joining and keep calling in on Wednesdays because this is very exciting for me to listen and learn. Thank you.
Realize that CB is a different type of service. You don't need a license to run in CB. You understand that, right?
I don't know if it's a... I have to get out his radio. He gave it to me a few years ago, and it's been in a box in my basement. I don't know if it's a CB radio or if it's radio.
I can tell you, and I can help you figure that out if you want to grab it and get on Skype and friend me and accept Skype call, and you can show me a few things. I'll tell you exactly what it is. Or you can take the model number off the front and put it into a search engine, your favorite search engine, and then it'll pull up something about it somewhere on the net. And you just go looking, and eventually it'll tell you what the frequencies are. If it's an old CB radio, it'll be an 11-meter radio around 26 to 27 megahertz, and that's right below the ham band.
Okay.
And you don't need a license to operate in there, but it doesn't go as far unless you put in a whole bunch of power. And when you put in a whole bunch of power, you're not exactly legal anymore. But people do it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Okay. Yeah, you can.
Thank you.
A lot. Okay, you're welcome.
Okay.
Who else would like to talk tonight? Or ask a question or make a comment or tell me what I'm doing wrong?
Can you hear me now, or am I still breaking up?
I can hear you very well, yes. Please go ahead, Jan in PA.
Just a comment on can you feel the radio? A friend of mine many years ago was up in Argentia, Newfoundland station there, worked on a radar site, and our radars and feel the radiation. What they did is they wore ball caps and they would stick a few bulbs in that. And so as you worked with people, if you saw somebody's hat light up, the bulbs light up, ran over and through the switch where the transmitter had gone wrong, and there was a lot of energy in the building. So in general, even though it was very hard energy, you feel it. Now, there were other people that were on duty and outside near the antennas, and some of them found that if they went over and stood under the antenna, they got warm. That got already cooked. So you don't, if you feel warm, move or secure whatever transmitter is near you. Over.
Well, you were breaking up at the beginning. Could you repeat what you said at the beginning with the light bulbs?
Okay. This friend of mine worked in one of the radar stations on I guess it was blind in those days. And since they could not feel the energy being radiated, if they had a problem that would be radiated in the building they were working, they would caps with a number of neon bulbs in them, not hooked to anything, just stuck or taped to the cap with scotch tape. And so if you're working with people, when you want and all the neon lights start lighting up, you run over and you throw the breaker on the transmitter because they've got a problem. Somehow energy's leaking into the building there, and so you need to secure it. But they couldn't feel it, so they didn't know by feeling that they had a problem.
But the other way is feeling the heat, and that's from a transmitter, and that's out of the way.
That's not get out of the way.
You're breaking up again, Jan.
But we don't normally radiate energy, so feel warm.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you talking with. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Anybody else want to put in 2 minutes? Thank you, Jan.
Who's the furthest person away that you've spoken to?
Me personally?
Yes.
I've had a conversation with a guy who could speak in English in Russia.
Wow.
So I went from Broomfield, Colorado to Russia. I had it written down what his town was, because he did tell me, but I don't recall what it was.
You must have a very... Do you talk to people every day?
No, I don't. I had to sell the house last year, and I took down all my antennas and all my coax that fed them, and dismantled my radio system, and I haven't had a chance to put it back up yet.
Wow, that'd be a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, but you gradually get into it. You have so much information that you need to digest, be able to be effective on HF high frequencies, that you tend to put a lot of time thinking about it. Well, I want to do this, but I don't want to do that. I actually had just a quarter-wave dipole centered on 40 meters, which is about 7 megahertz. And both of the arms, the center where the coax came off and went down to my radio, was hanging on the point of a house at the cornice. And then I had two trees better than 90 degrees apart. So it was kind of directional towards the northeast. Well, that you draw the arc over the globe, the shortest distance.
Great
point.
Circle?
Yeah, the Great Circle.
It's a Great Circle. Yeah,
the Great Circle route. If you drew the Great Circle route, you'd end up in Russia somewhere. And that's what it did. So I tend to think he had a much better radio and much more power on his end. And he was pulling me out of the static. And we managed to make a communication. I was so excited, I jumped up and told my family. And when I got back down, he was talking to somebody else. I said, well, I lost my turn.
And the other gentleman, where are you situated? Are you?
I was
in the middle.
Jan?
Go ahead.
I was in Broomfield, Colorado, but go ahead, Jan.
I live in the middle of Pennsylvania.
Oh, that's right. You're in Pennsylvania. Okay. Where?
Yep.
Did you have a setup like? Do you go around and help people set up their systems? Is there anyone who does that, who will assist, or do you do that over the phone? Or I guess that's what this call is about, kind of walking people through it.
Right.
This is the first time I've been on your call, so I'm sorry about my silly questions.
Go
ahead, Jean.
I would assume that if you could find your local amateur radio club and contact them, they would have people that would be delighted to help you decide what you need and how to set it up, and then give you a hand and that sort of thing.
Do people all over the country call into your call, or are there many calls like yours? Because I've never heard a call like yours. I listened to some of your recordings, and the wealth of information is incredible. Are there many calls like yours?
Yeah, they're spread out, and I would say that there's probably no directory of who's on when. But what the hams generally do is they have a meeting every month, and some of them have secondary meetings maybe two or three times a month. And the one is for general business once a month, and then maybe every week or every other week they have a kind of instructional class for new ham radio operators or people who are working on getting their license. That's why it's so important for you to go ahead and connect to a ham club, like Jan was saying. Find out who the hams are in your local area.
Okay, I will do that. Thank you.
If you go back to that ARRL site, Mm-hmm. You can find the ARR Ham Radio Clubs by looking under, let's see, where was it?
I went to that site when I was listening to one of your recordings, so I have been there.
Oh, okay. Then you know kind of where it is. You mm-hmm. go through there. There is a list that you can start looking up of where all the ham clubs, ARRL affiliated ham clubs. ARRL has been going along for a long time, and they really help out a lot of people. And the best way for you to start studying this and figure out what you're doing is to get with somebody at a ham club who likes to help people. And hams, they love to help people, especially that are getting into ham radio.
Okay.
So I would point you back to that site. And I
Thank
am
you.
Available if you want to ask a question at any time. You can send me an
okay.
email.
Okay. Thank
All
you.
Right. Anyone, you're welcome. Anyone else?
Yeah, Terry, this is Doug in Colorado.
Well, hi, Doug.
How the heck are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. Lori and I were just having a discussion on Skype about licensing. And, you know, this is all marvelous information, but for me personally, at this time in my life, I don't plan on going beyond the Baofeng. And I have a GMRS, General Mobile Radio Service license, which doesn't require a test, but... it does have a fee, of course. I think it's like $75. But that makes it legal to broadcast at up to 5 watts within a narrow bandwidth. And that works for the Baofengs on a local level. It's kind of irrelevant to all the rest of the discussion, but I thought that might be interesting to someone.
Yeah, that's true. That's all true. I do want to call your attention to, you can use repeaters, but the number of GRMS repeaters, and GMRS repeaters is quite a lot less than what the ham repeaters are available. We have two things, two purposes in the NLA HamsNet. The first is to support local communications for our committees of safety and committees of correspondence. The GMRS radios would work for that if everybody had that frequency. The other one is, how do we move information back if we need to talk and longer distances for any reason? And how do you do it when you don't have a repeater and you got a mountain in the way or something like that? And there's ways around it using the ham radio bands to communicate on HF. So that's kind of why we're where we're at. And so I'm glad. I know that you're over there. You're pretty close to the St. Louis Valley, aren't you?
Sorry, I was muted out. Yeah, it's just over I can't remember the name of the pass right at the moment, but yeah, it's just
okay.
50,
so you're
20
not
miles.
You're not in the St. Louis Valley.
No.
And the reason I mentioned that one is that people, if you've never exposed yourself to the St. Louis Valley in southern Colorado, that's an interesting place. And it's all flat. It's about 40 miles wide and 120 miles long, something like that. And it's just as flat as it can be. And it's got mountains all the way around it. And so it has its own type of considerations. But you're close. You almost need a repeater to get over into there. So, but that's good. Okay.
Yeah, I'm in Buena Vista, just north of the San Luis Valley, and We have several repeaters around the valley here, and I've listened in to, I haven't participated because I'm not sure it's legal for me to do so with a GMRS license through the repeater net. but it's real interesting to listen into them. And yeah, it's just, I wanted people to know who aren't getting into this real deep, just want to get the local communications going, that you can legally transmit with the GMRS license, and you don't have to take a test. Over.
That's very true. And you do have some reduced power requirements. You're not supposed to do anything above 2 watts, maybe 4 watts in some of them. And really, I want to emphasize the listening part. As you get closer and closer getting your ham license, or you start using the radios more, you want to listen. You got 2 ears and you got 1 mouth, so listen about twice as much as you talk. And you'll pick up what people are saying the more you listen. And you get an opportunity to hear what the rhythm is of transmissions on ham radio or GMRS or whatever radio service you're using. But you can listen to anything you want. It's in the transmission that the FCC is upset if you don't have a license on the ham band. But really, they like you to pay the fee so that they know who you are on the GMRS. So, okay, thank you, David. I appreciate the input. Anybody else?
Good evening. It's Mary in Pennsylvania.
Hi, Mary.
How are you?
Oops. Good.
Now am I coming through?
Yeah, you're coming through. But
thanks. I apologize. I was on speaker.
We need to wrap it up pretty soon, so go ahead.
Gee, okay. Well, two things. One, Jan, I'm not looking to put any pressure or ask where my thing is. I was just wondering how the gentleman is that's doing the programming. You had indicated that he wasn't well. That's all I was looking to find out. How is he doing any better?
I knew.
Pardon me?
I've been trying to call for about 2.5 minutes yet.
I'm sorry. You know what? I think it's, I don't know if it's my phone, but it's like you're bouncing. I can't understand.
Yeah, you're breaking up again, Jan.
I have been unable to the fellow that's doing the programming.
Oh, so you don't know how he's doing. Okay, thanks. And my other question,
right.
I was listening. I'm having a devil of a time with my computer. I think it's my plug, the connection, because it's been weeks and it just keeps shutting down on me. And I was hearing the conversation about the actual physical manual. I was trying to follow, and I'm going to apologize. I am on the homepage of the ARRL. Where is the book that you
the,
referred to, the manual?
If you look on the blue banner across the top that shows you the sections, there's one called Licensing, Education,
yes,
and Training. It's third one over. Click on that.
Okay. Gotcha. And then the first book is the third edition?
Right. The first book is the one with the technician class checked, level one technician.
Okay, and it doesn't matter if you get the softback or the spiral, they're both the same?
Yes.
Okay, terrific. Thank you so very much. Appreciate it.
Okay. All right. Okay. With that, I think we need to get off of this place so that they can have their next conference call. This has been the NLA HamsNet. I want to thank everybody who participated tonight. We really appreciate you. And I'll try and come up with a new chapter to teach for next week. Anybody's welcome to send me email. My email is on the website under the communications plan where all these recordings are. I'm also YB Pilot, Yankee Bravo Pilot, up on Skype. Everybody's welcome to call me, connect with me, and go from there. So,
Terry,
yes.
Excuse me. I'm sorry to do this to you. I do have another question. I did research on the website for an AARL club, and I did it within 50 miles of my home and 50 miles of my former home, which is like 30 miles away, and it's saying there is nothing in the area.
Okay,
is there another location that I can go to?
Just start searching on the net.
Okay.
And,
I mean, is there are there other clubs? Is there another?
If you want to call me, I will help you get it, but I can't do it right now. I need to get off.
No problem. Thank you so very much.
All right.
There goes my computer again. Good night. Thank you.
Good night. Okay, this NLA Hampstead is held every week on Wednesday night at 6 p.m., and we really appreciate everybody participating. I hope it was to your good, and we'll see you next week. Thank you all for coming back. Please give me a call or an email or a Skype contact if you have any questions during the week. And if anybody has anything they'd like to cover, any subjects, please send it along too. This is Terry, K-I-0-R-E, and we've conducted it like a ham's net, but not exactly the same. And I'll say that the net is now closed. Thank you very much, Jan.
Okay, I'll turn the recording off.